First vision for it was we wanted to do it for our community. So the first vision was buy-in for Indigenous artists, knowing that the quality of the music being made by the artists has appeal not only to like the Indigenous community but also to non-Indigenous listeners. So we wanted to be able to kind of have that centrality, and this has happened a few times through our site that I know about, probably other times too, but where artists have connected with one another through the site. So they've discovered each other's music and then they want to collaborate, or they want to, like, you know, just support each other and that. So that's been awesome.
Like, it's really interesting to watch things grow and change. Like the late to early 2000s, when Aboriginal Voices Radio was going, they were starting to go across the country. I guess they saw me as a mover and shaker back then when I was in Edmonton. So they came to me and asked if I would help them get their CRTC license in Edmonton.
You know, when Red Man Laughing was turned into a national comedy special for CBC, they were very confused, because the first season was all sketches and me doing characters and weird commercials and like comedic monologues. It was a comedy podcast, Red Man Laughing. Then Idle No More happened, and I had a choice, you know, I had a decision to make about the platform, because I had at that time somewhere around 17,000 people listening to it every week.
An unknown native speaker addressing the National Congress of American Indians in the 1960s said, "Today, we are again evaluating the changing winds. May we be strong and wise and equal to our people of another day in reading the signs of change accurately and interpreting them wisely." Modern survival techniques requires picking up the new tools of technology, embracing the digital age, and creating a presence upon all cyber, web, and satellite territories. On this episode of Indians on the Airwaves, we hear from RPM-FM webmaster and podcaster Jarrett Martineau, CBC Aboriginal radio podcast producer Kim Wheeler, and webcast podcast mogul and comedian Ryan McMahon, three experts who are claiming cyberspace for Indigenous voices.
And Idle No More happened, and I had to decide if I was going to keep doing moose hunting jokes, or if I was going to turn the platform over to the people in a way that was helpful and beneficial to not only the people, but to myself as well. I mean, to have the chance to sit with, well, you were on my podcast in Victoria, to sit with people like Leanne Simpson or Lee Miracle or Teyage or make the list. I mean, to have the chance to learn from these people and to share their ideas, I couldn't turn my back to that.
It was cool. It's kind of like an organic thing that kind of grew into focus. So there was this company called Make Believe Media who was producing a documentary about Derek Miller, blues musician who you know, who's awesome. Yeah. And they were doing a documentary about Derek, and they wanted to do kind of a digital component to go with the documentary. It's a documentary for APTN, TV-based thing about him and his story. And so they were originally thought, the company was talking through various kind of ideas about what would be a good digital accompaniment to the doc. And they brought me on board to kind of help with that process and kind of help them vision what some ideas would look like. And so there were sort of a bunch of things that were in the mix at the time. One was a kind of like a virtual recording studio that people would log on to and kind of sort of maneuver their way around and these various things. And so those conversations ended up being, and this is like, I think for me where it all kind of really clicked into view, is I was thinking, well, okay, yes, it's about Derek and it's about this kind of documentary, but in a bigger way, like, where is there a place where we can go to find kind of all the cool Indigenous music that's being made? So Derek is one among many. A lot of people don't even know about him at that point. How do we even kind of find where other artists are? And we're like, you know what? We should do a site that's like that we can profile Derek in, but that builds the kind of architecture to then be able to support all the other amazing Indigenous artists that are out there. And then that was like clear that that was a real need that we could fill.
I've already been pretty familiar with the music scene. I've been in writing for media and Indigenous media since 93, and my entire career has really been focused on bringing positive Indigenous stories to the mainstream media. And, you know, what's more positive than entertainers making it in their industry, right? So actors, musicians, painters, writers. So those were the kinds of stories that I always covered, and still cover to this day. Like, I'm still always pushing that entertainment agenda. So I was pretty familiar with who the musicians were. I'd been watching and going to the Canadian Aboriginal Music Awards. I'd been going to the Aboriginal People's Choice Music Awards. I sat on the board for Aboriginal Music Week. So I was pretty, you know, pretty well, very familiar with the scene. And so when CBC asked me to do that podcast, part of it was they were in the process of moving from Radio 3, which was a user-generated website. So musicians uploaded their own music, right? And they checked off the boxes that Radio 3 could use their music for free, right? So they didn't have to pay SoCan and all that. And when they moved away from Radio... So they were in the process of moving away from Radio 3 and relaunching into CBC Music, which was now music and stories online. So we had to, in order to make a weekly podcast, I first had to build up the Indigenous Music Library. So in the 3 years that I was doing it, we went from, I think, about 91 artists to over 300 artists. And so I was adding like 50 to 75 new artists a year. And that was doing the research online and finding people and this, you know, looking at the awards and who's submitting and then contacting them personally saying, can you upload your music and we'll put you on a podcast and this is our audience and this is how many listeners we get and this is where it goes. And it was amazing that all these artists just responded. Like, they were waiting for somebody to ask them. Because the artists, like our artists, right, the majority of them are independent. And when I say the majority of them, I mean 99.9% of them are not with a music label. So they get funding, they scrimp and save their pennies, they produce a CD, and then they don't know what to do with it. So when somebody comes knocking from, you know, the mighty CBC and says, we want to put you on a podcast, right? We want to share your music. They're really happy and thankful. And I'm happy and thankful that CBC gave me a place to be able to do this for our community.
This is Revision Quest with your host, Daryl Dennis.
If you are a longtime listener to the show, you know that there are a lot of misconceptions and stereotypes about Aboriginal people. But we pride ourselves on clearing up some of those nagging questions that people might be thinking, but don't have a reliable source to ask. Some of the topics we've covered have even sent our mostly Aboriginal staff scrambling to dig up answers. Let's face it, if even us natives have questions about natives, what chance do the rest of you have? A few of my favorites have been, why are there so many Native Americans in Canada? Was there a lot of immigration back in the day? Or, if you're a girl and your dad is a chief, does that make you an Indian princess? Or one of the more popular ones from our first season was, is it true that all Native people get a free truck? We've tried to answer many of these ponderances, but there always seems to be more questions. So we took an unscientific poll of average Canadians with the promise of answering
Everything you wanted to know about Aboriginals, but were afraid to ask.
So that is something that we did. We debated early on about whether or not we would do kind of like an open platform where anybody could just create an account and upload their music. And then we thought, you know, well, we're just duplicating stuff that's there already. And especially now, you know, every musician I can think of are on SoundCloud or on Bandcamp or like these different sites that host the music. So they didn't really need another one of those. So we thought, okay, well, maybe like another way we could think about doing this is to have, not to try to gatekeep, but more to try to support work that's like really pushing things forward, have kind of like more of an editorial voice that could kind of really bring you know, different artists to the surface and so on. And that's always a conversation for us. So it's sort of about wanting to not only say, okay, well, here's an artist that's really established and has 10 records out and a big record label and can play to thousands of people. We wanted to get, you know, the kid in the community who just like did some home recording and put up a couple songs on SoundCloud, and we found them and we want to support that music too. So when it comes up where, you know, there's certain, you know, bands are always on the hustle. They're trying to get their music heard. People want to get out on the radio in whatever form it, you know, looks like, including with our site. And yeah, it's often more of a kind of respectful encouragement to kind of keep doing what they're doing. And we haven't had a lot of pushback, I would say, overall on that front. What it's done in a positive way, and I don't know that I necessarily anticipated this, but it's made it, like, people have been very thankful when they do get featured. So that's one thing with our community that I just love so much, is people are so kind of appreciative of the fact that we take the time to promote a new release. Because often we'll do that without much sort of discussion with the artist. We'll just write something and then we'll send them the link and be like, hey, by the way, we did a post on your record. And they're like, hey, awesome, cool, hey everybody, I got featured on RPM, which is awesome. That's like what we wanted. So
I think it's really interesting that people are getting, you know, because anybody can make a podcast, right? Anybody can make a radio show now with the internet, right? It's that, and that is really exciting. However, the content can sometimes be really draining to listen to. And like for me, I can't sit down and listen to an hour and a half long podcast of two people kind of, we have this podcast and isn't it great? And it's like, okay, but you know, I would just want to go to them and say, I think what you guys are doing is great. Now let's just focus it so you can actually build a really strong following. And they just, you know, people who are doing that really should pay attention to what the real successful podcasts are doing. And, you know, frame, I guess, follow what, you know, what their success is. And I know that, you know, as Indigenous people, we're like, you know, they will say things like, well, that's the colonial way, this is our way. And it's like, well, that might be, but sometimes we can't always reinvent the wheel, right? What works, works. It works for a reason. And if you want to try and retrain an entire audience, right, that, you know, for generations has listened to radio in this way, right, and or podcasts.
Sometimes when you look back on that digital footprint, you're kind of going like, oh, boy.
Eesh. It's out there now.
Yeah, you should have thought about that a little bit more. So that's the danger of working digital, is sometimes you make mistakes. Sometimes you think something's good and it wasn't quite as good as you thought, and so it's you learn. Yeah, well, I think I try to edit as little as possible, and I don't. I tend not to go into interviews or conversations with people with any paper. I do all the research before I think about really critically what I would like to try to achieve, where I start from and where I'd like to end at with a guest. But at the end of the day, I feel like I want to leave the conversation as organic and as whole as I can. Yeah, there's some times where I'll listen back and I'll be fumbling for words or something won't come out quite clearly, and I'll never go back and re-record it, but I will cut some of those little bits out. But for the most part, what you hear on our on Red Man Laughing specifically is uncut and unedited.
I know that when we were doing Aboriginals, because I had my own Facebook page, right, and I could see where the likes were coming from. They were coming from, like, Europe, right? Australia, New Zealand. And I was going, whoa, that's so trippy that they would, you know, like the page and they'd be way over here. And where are these people coming from that, you know, how do they hear about this? Because it's, you know, it's just a little music podcast. But it's really interesting because, you know, like if you make friends, you know, like the musicians make friends with people they travel around. So like, you know, people like Digging Roots are going to Australia usually like once a year, right? And we're friends with them. I'm friends with them. So if they, you know, if they're on their Facebook page and they see me tag them on the show that I'm working on, then they go, oh, let's go check this out. And then they check it out and then they hear all this other, all these other musicians. And I guess, you know, that's how word spreads. So it's, yeah, it's really fascinating that it can travel like that just because of the internet where, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it wasn't on anybody's radar.
We knew we wanted it to be more than just a music blog. And we knew we wanted to have like kind of artist pages and everything. But we also thought, you know, one of the unique things that's happening in terms of Indigenous music and Indigenous kind of creativity is that there's such an inseparability between like the social and the political context in which people are creating stuff and the work that they make. And we thought like having a podcast, and it's like a fairly, you know, tightly woven sort of thematic podcast would be a really good opportunity to actually explore some of that. So whether that was about regional places where certain artists are living and the kind of music that they're making, or whether it's about a kind of thematic aspect or a genre that people are working in or whatever, both just kind of showcase the diversity, but also to just actually get a chance to talk to the artists in a little more depth. So not just here's the record and where to buy it, but like, what are, you know, how are they living? Where are they at? Kind of what do they think about their indigeneity and their music and all of that. And that's, you know, we did kind of a block of podcasts early on, again, when we had like a lot of resources to be able to produce that. And that as a kind of a component of the site to me is something that not only for ones that we produce in-house, but also in terms of trying to bring in some of the other work that's happening around Indigenous radio, I think that RPM could like really help grow into help supporting some of those other shows that are happening elsewhere. And we've had lots of conversations with like local stations and you know, community radio programs and stuff that have some kind of an online presence, but they don't necessarily reach too far beyond where the community is because people don't know about it. So I think that that's one thing that I'm hoping like RPM can do more of, because that storytelling component goes so much alongside the music, right? And like, I feel like you can't only just have the tunes, you got to have the stories behind them too. Yeah.
I need my Matazuan Sasnun, Miss Naked Shin. Okay, Chatterba, get marching away. We will not find life in their system of paper. We will find life when we pick up our sacred duties as caretakers and keepers of this earth.
I wanted to read you the mission statement and explain to you a little bit about the origins of Idle No More so that everyone can understand fully and completely why they should back this movement that is taking place right now in a nation that you call
your
own.
When I think about, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, when my kid's in high school writing a paper about Idle No More, she'll be able to go back and hear from Chief Isidore Day, Pam Palmiter, people that were there at the steps of the Legislative Assembly when they tried to break into the House of Commons. They were there. And we talked to them 2 hours after, and we podcasted it. And so they give us a political perspective, a grounded and solid political perspective that comes from the meeting where they decided to storm the buildings. You know, the podcast was recorded live in Ottawa during Chief Spence's hunger strike. And so making these archives and making these shows, I'm always aware that people are going to find these things a month, a year, 5 years down the road. And I think that's one of the real benefits of doing this type of work, is that we are creating that, that digital legacy. And it's not just a digital legacy. It's also, we're looking at publishing books and comic books and doing a lot of different things with the company that will all come from the audio that we're creating. And in terms of who's listening, I like to think that our shows are being listened by our people, you know, but I don't know that to be true. I think we have a lot of people that are listening. When I look at our subscriber base on Indian and Cowboy, those that are paying for our service, you know, we only have 60 paid subscribers to this point, which we're very grateful for. But I look at those names and there's a lot of non-native people there. And in fact, there are a lot of prominent Canadians that have, for whatever reason, found their way to the website and are paying and supporting. And so I'm confused by it. I wish I had a better answer. I don't know who's listening, but I know people are. And to be a small part of a big sea of change that is upon us is an honor.
Yeah, I think there'll probably be new sources and new ways that we can consume them. So I actually just saw a commercial for Buick, and they have built in internet in their car now, right? So, you know, right now you can't stream a station online in your car, right? But if every car in, like, you know, 5 years has Wi-Fi on board, well, you can stream your show from anywhere. So now you get to hear your show, the show that you want, in your car radio. And that's, you know, that's going to be something really new, because right now, what do you get in your car, right? Before there was satellite, you got AM radio. So you got local AM radio, right? And then it changed. And then you got FM radio. And then you got AM stereo radio, right? And so, you know, so I think that will be a different way for people to consume things, is in their car radio, especially with Wi-Fi. Because then you can tune into anything, anywhere. And if it's on demand, you can listen at your leisure. If it's on podcast, again, you can listen at your leisure. And I think a lot of people consume radio in their vehicles. Like, people do, you know, they do download podcasts and they listen to them when they walk or they run or they exercise. But if you're on a road trip and you can listen to whatever you want to on demand, how exciting is that?
So we've tried to kind of stake a fairly contemporary part of that. So obviously sort of fairly forward-looking in terms of even the genres and stuff that we profile. While trying to do some work about kind of contextualizing where within that continuum the contemporary music is coming from. But I also recognize that, like, especially when you work on the internet, and the internet is, like, particularly like this, the internet is obsessed with something new. So we can put out, you know, a post about a new album or do a new album premiere, and it's 2 weeks later and people are like, oh yeah, that old thing from 2 weeks ago. So that kind of, like, drive to, like, everything only having to be new all the time is also kind of a challenge in terms of programming, because part of what's interesting about what some of the artists are doing now is the fact that they're connected to what, you know, of course, connected to the artists that have gone before. And I actually feel like there's, like, maybe just a big opportunity that we don't do enough of for our site and elsewhere, which is to actually bring forward some of those stories or some of those recordings or whatever, with, you know, a compilation like Native North America, that for many of us, I mean, for us included too, it's the first time to hear some of these sounds that really only reached a small audience at the time they were recorded. And now we have the ability to, like, get that music out there. So why wouldn't we kind of reach back as well as reaching forward, I think, yeah. But I'm not a dedicated podcast listener. I'm very, like, I default actually now to a lot of stuff on SoundCloud, and I listen to, because we have a fairly active SoundCloud account for RPM and we follow lots of really interesting stuff that way. And I listen to stuff kind of when I come across it, but I'm not, like, a devout podcast listener the way that I know, you know, certain friends are, who they really, like, download them every week for their workouts or for their transit or whatever it is. And they're really, like, really dedicated. I listen to lots all the time, but I'm not kind of, yeah. I'm a disloyal podcast listener. What it is culturally. Well, it's interesting. Oh, so our tagline is Indigenous Music Culture. So really culturally for us, it's about creating that culture of celebrating Indigenous music within that. So our kind of culture is a community, maybe? Yeah. Interesting. I would say that it's like the pulse of what's happening in Indian country in that way. We're trying to kind of keep with the kind of rhythm of what's happening, especially with young artists and stuff. So spiritually, that's where we're at, yeah. Musically, I mean, obviously we want to be kind of a central place. So we want to, yeah, musically we're trying to be a place of centrality, but also a place of total inclusiveness and variety. So yeah, there's no bounds with it, which is what I love about the site. I think the biggest thing that we do, and this was kind of intentional, was to sort of just take for granted that Indigenous artists are doing really interesting work, and then just setting up the kind of basics about what it is that they're doing and where they're from. So we sort of didn't try to position this thing as some kind of defense of the fact that Native people are still around. And we don't do any of that kind of work of trying to like prove to anybody. It's just like, well, here's great music. Oh, and by the way, they're from Six Nations. And if you don't know anything about that, here's where they're from and here's how they relate to where they're from. And so we just take for granted that like we're here and doing awesome shit and let's move on from there. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So it is weird because that digital footprint is very different. Like I'm not doing this to make high art, you know, I'm not precious about making this content. And I guess that's something I think about often is I don't want to make crap. But I don't want to be precious about this. It's too important. It's an emergency. I feel like every day we're trying to fill the hole in the leaky canoe, so to speak. And we have to keep building and taking up space and making things. And there is room for high art. There is room for that. But it's not what we do right now.
So I'm just gonna we're gonna do I can do word association with you if okay. You don't mind back and forth. So when I say voice, what comes to mind?
Well, right now, because I'm so consumed with my radio the radio shows, voices like Rosanna Dearchild, voices the community. It's people who are, you know, being allowed to speak our stories.
Yeah. When I say airwaves, what comes to mind?
CBC, NCI, APTN, yeah, I'm so focused on Indigenous media that like that's what always pops into my head first off.
Yeah. When I say Native beats, what comes to mind?
Native beats, wow. That's music, it's drums, it's new radio. I think people who have shows that have focused on that, so then I, you know, Wab Canoe, who did a special called Live by the Drum. Janet Rogers, who did her drumming show and Voices of Resistance. Yeah, it's specials. It's radio specials that have used either drum or beat in their programming title.
Good, yeah.
We hope you will make one of the many podcasts and webcasts mentioned here part of your regular listening. My name is Janet Rogers, producer of Indians on the Airwaves, made possible by CFUV-FM and the CRFC Radio Meters Fund. Thanks for listening.